This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Many forms of human-powered transportation, like walking or riding a bike, were used long before the invention of the automobile. And as concerns for the environment and our population's health increase, advocacy groups and experts are calling for a return to these modes of active transportation. This week in La Crosse, stakeholders have gathered for the Midwest Active Transportation Conference and the Wisconsin Bike Summit. Joining us in studio to talk about human-powered transit are Matthew Kristen, founder of Urban Connections, Dr. James Longhurst, associate professor at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse and bike advocate, and Lewis Kuhlman, associate planner and community development for the city of La Crosse. And Matthew, let's start by talking about, you know, what human-powered transportation is. Can you give us a good explanation?
You've expressed it in the sense that it's human-powered, so it's something non-motorized. The expanded view is that it's not just bicycle and walking. It's also boarding and blading, and even skiing is included. So there are places in the world that people can get around in the winter by skiing, but typically it's walking and bicycling. What's interesting is that as you look at it, it's active. So it's the difference between active versus sedentary or passive. So driving in an automobile or motor vehicle is a very passive, sedentary activity versus an active getting out and do something. So we also would include transit, busing and trains and that's used for commuting as a part of that, because you're having to walk or get to there by a human-powered means rather than just getting out of the door of one vehicle and into another. And there's certainly, you know, La Crosse itself has been the first in the state to have buses that have bike rack facilities put on them, so you can take a bike, get to a bus stop, get off at a place, and then ride to another destination. So it has a fairly broad definition, but it's really that the significant is the difference between active versus sedentary and human-powered versus motor.
And do you think this definition is kind of evolving as more more varieties of this kind of human power transportation kind of develop?
Well, I think it's a combination. So the evolution is partly in our own conception of what it is and how we can get around. The fact that our society in the U.S. is changing. The millennials are bringing to the table a desire to live in places where they don't need a car to get around. The baby boomers are looking to move back into a city and do the same, to live somewhere where they're close into a lot of the culture and activity. So there's that evolution of our thinking about how we want to get around, and then there's the other side of what's being developed as means to get around. For instance, actually in Australia right now, there's a large group of the population that are using a modified skateboard, something that we wouldn't call a skateboard necessarily exactly, but it's, you know, lightweight, 22 pounds, remote controlled, can go between 6 to 30 miles on a charge. So that the types of means or vehicles, if you want to say it, are changing and also altering our perception and conception of what it is.
And James, you know, obviously walking and biking have been around for a long time, but it seems like this movement has really, you know, gained some traction in the past few years. You know, when do you think that kind of the term human power transportation and the movement that kind of goes along with it, when do you think that started?
I thank you for asking me a history question. It plays right up my alley. Looking at people identifying human-powered transportation, I definitely think we can look back to the 1970s and the birth of the modern environmental movement. And a lot of that, as a historian, we would look at and say, well, that's a reaction to the post-World War II suburbanization in America, that really before that point in time, there were many more mixes of transportation in American cities. Rapid transit, trolleys, buses, pedestrianism, and dense urban living. And then after World War II, what we call the suburban experiment really solidified monomodal transportation. The automobile became in some ways not only desirable but necessary to get around in a lot of American cities. And it's in the 1970s and the environmental concerns where people said very much looking at a lifestyle that reduces impact on energy as well as healthy, we want to look backwards towards human-powered transportation. But, you know, Matthew used the term vehicle, and we historians point out that that's a word, it's a legal word that exists long before the automobile becomes quite popular, and vehicles in the legal sense include many things, including bicycles, including horse-drawn, including omnibuses and trolleys and hansoms and landaus and an amazing list of things. And the motor vehicle is just one thing that's added to that list.
And Lewis, why is it important for people, you know, to be thinking about active transportation as cities continue to develop and change? Why is this something that people should be thinking about?
That's a good question. One of the things I think that's really important is that often bicycling is seen as a recreational activity. So one of the things that we're working on is trying to convince people that this can also be an alternate form of getting around, to getting from getting to work, from getting to take care of different errands. So shifting that mindset that this is an alternate form of transportation to like do work, go commuting, it is an important thing for us to focus on. And one of the main reasons for that is we've a lot of people complain about like car congestion and automobile congestion. So having a bicycle or being able to walk to where you want to go is a good way to get around that congestion, not having to find a parking space. And also, as Matthew mentioned, riding a bus, how can you take a bus somewhere with your bike and go the rest of the way? So trying to utilize those different forms of transportation to get around quicker, hopefully, and just also healthier. So.
Matthew.
So a couple other things to add to that. One of the things that people may not be aware of is that in today's society, the average U.S. citizen sits 9.3 hours in a day. And in the medical world, they've equated that to the same effects on the body as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. So the reality of how much we're sedentary, and I go back to that idea of, you know, active versus sedentary transportation. So the fact that we are sitting so much more, 1 in 3 people in the U.S. are obese at this point. That means that they're on the average sitting 2.5 hours longer. So the idea of active transportation is finding that means of being able to get people active. And there's the ramifications economically. You know, at this point in time, if you were to not use your car, you could almost equate about $1 a mile that you would save. But another way to look at it economically is that the amount that it costs us to own a car and operate in the U.S. is, you know, and this is according to the National Highway Safety Administration, it costs about 60 cents a mile total, which on the average for in America is between $9,000 to $12,000 a year. And that in itself is the same amount. If you were to go out and buy a $200,000 home at 4% interest over a 30-year loan, your mortgage payments would be about the same. So in effect, the economics of this are tremendous in terms of what you could save. You know, if we had the means for more people to be able to live without a car in our urban settings, you know, the money that people in lower resourced people that, you know, that takes a whole lot more of a chunk of their income in order to maintain transportation, they could effectively improve their housing situation, which is a very significant part of the lifestyle of lower income individuals and families. So there's the economics not only to individual pocketbooks, on the average a person who is biking a couple times a week, 5 miles one way, 10 miles total, can save a minimum of $300 a year on personal health care costs. You know, the list continues to evolve in terms of the economic benefits, not to mention the health benefits. In our country, we're spending just on diabetes alone in the hundreds of billions of dollars on the medical, meeting the medical needs. And so, you know, so there's a lot of reasons, good reasons. Time factor, people can easily put active transportation into their schedule as opposed to adding it on to going to a health facility, not that they aren't good and have other purposes, but, you know, that balance and being able to incorporate it into their day can make a difference also.
And James, did you have something to add?
Well, I was just going to toss in there about the diabetes rates. The World Health Organization has their global report on diabetes out this year, 2016, and it's just depressing. It's unbelievably terrifying. We're looking at a global prevalence of diabetes doubling since 1980 to 8.5%, and it's 8.5% of everyone on the planet. You know, that's really catastrophic. So we're talking about costs both to individuals and families, but costs to society. And my point as a historian would be to say that, well, we did this to ourselves. We chose a design of cities and a design of our society that makes it really somewhat difficult for people to have enough physical activity in the day to maintain basic health. You know, and this is our by our design of creating suburbs where they are and building roads in the way we did and subsidizing certain transportation choices. And the cost of that is something we all bear.
You know, we know that transportation budget for our state is in the top two most highest budget amounts. And so when we look at road construction, roadways, and transportation routes and how we're funding and building, you know, well, I'll just say that to me, we need a much more reasonable approach, and what active transportation gives us is a way to balance that, because we're very good at building really big superhighways, you know, with four lanes going from point A to point B. But when it comes down to what we need inside of cities and more urban settings, like La Crosse, in order for us to accommodate a good, healthy neighborhood, a good, healthy transportation, and, you know, being able to have kids access schools and be able to do that safely, whether it's walking, biking, or blading or boarding, the idea is that we have to begin to transition, that some of the ways that we've gone about building transportation routes has to change, not only for the sake of our overall state budgets and local budgets on transportation, but also to make sure that we're still also accommodating ways that neighborhoods and families and kids can still be kids. And
you're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about human-powered transportation, how increased walking or biking could positively impact the Cooley region. We're here with Matthew Kristen, principal of Urban Connections, an education and advocacy organization in Onalaska, bike advocate and author Dr. James Longhurst from UWL, and associate planner Lewis Kuhlman from the city of La Crosse. And Lewis, you know, how has the city of La Crosse kind of embraced human-powered transportation?
In 2012, the city developed a bicycle and pedestrian master plan and formed a bicycle and pedestrian advisory committee, which gives the city advice on where to put different sorts of bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure. So that's a regular committee that meets every month or every other month. And basically we look at what's going well with bicycle and pedestrian transportation and what needs more work. So right now, we're in the process of planning a neighborhood greenway, which is hopefully intended to make bicycling in the street more comfortable and discourage automobile traffic or slow down automobile traffic on those routes. So we're just looking at different ways to make people more comfortable biking and walking in the city.
And do you think this issue of making biking and walking more accessible, do you think that's important to the people of La Crosse?
Yeah, as Matthew and Dr. Longhurst mentioned, it's very important for our health. It's also important for the property values and physical development of the city. If the less we dedicate to storing and moving cars, the more space there is for people and for other forms of recreation. So I think I think there's a big mindset change that we need to work on to help people see that this is a good way to get around. That's not only benefits your health, but also the community.
In 2014, the city and the Y and a few others did a study that was for a feasibility study for the bike share program that's still in the works. But the one thing that was done was there was an electronic survey that hit about 800 people in the city area, and 92 to 93% of them valued the option of having alternative bicycle and pedestrian options. And so that was a very good representation of a very cross-section of people in the La Crosse area that demonstrated that this is definitely of high interest and a high priority in terms of our overall use of space and design and development.
You know, we had a similar effect in 2014 as well. We did a survey here on the UWL campus as part of a larger study of how people get around. And we already have really high percentages of student faculty and staff walking and biking, 39% walking, 21% bicycling to and from work into classes. But we also asked, if people could do things differently, would you like to bike, walk, or use public transportation? And we got greater than 60% response. People wanted to have the option, but felt that they couldn't. We don't know why they felt that they couldn't. Either it's safety, or it's accessibility, or frequency of public transit. But, you know, to look at the concerns of not enough parking, or great costs of roads, or great impact on health, given an opportunity, I think people would change the way they got around, particularly for short distances, trips, and their own commuting.
Have there been any kind of, I guess, studies are looking into why people are kind of afraid to maybe embrace this?
Absolutely. And I, you know, we in the advocacy world, we talk about dividing advocacy work into five or six E's of, and I'm going to forget one here. Let me run through this. So it's, we list these E's. It's enforcement, it's education, it's encouragement, it's engineering, it's
evaluation
planning, right? That's one I always forget. And then additionally,
environment,
and sometimes equity. And we talk about, you know, how can we change people's behavior through these? I have come down on the side of engineering. I think that engineering directs people's lives a great deal. The way that we've designed our cities shapes how we live within them. And when we build transportation networks to get to A to B, sometimes we're also making it difficult to get from C to D. You know, to maybe perhaps we can drive quickly on our highway, but then there's controlled access and it's difficult to get a bus through there, or is it difficult to cross or something like that. I realize that it's perhaps one of the more expensive options to re-engineer our cities. But I also think that I put a great deal of faith in this. We've had some very recent studies come out from Portland State University looking at designs of sidewalks and also of protected bike lanes as new engineering concepts. And particularly the old, the young, and the people who don't walk or bike very fast, they would like a little bit more protection, a little bit more safety. And they adopt to that much more quickly, rather than simply putting a sidewalk directly on the side of a fast-moving road, which is not fun for anyone.
Lewis, I saw you shaking your head. I mean, are you looking at some of these engineering issues as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think one of the main drivers for the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee is to make sure that our engineering projects are more mindful of their effect on people walking and biking. So I think just having that awareness will hopefully lead to better design.
And Matthew?
There's a study that was just done recently, and what I'm going to lead into is the notion of what we're doing to promote youth and kids getting to and from places, whether it's school or after-school events. And one of the studies found that, and this is part of the perception of our transportation set up in our country socially, is that they interviewed middle school students, fifth and sixth graders, and this was done out in New Jersey at, through Princeton. And what they found was that the parents had a very different viewpoint of why they didn't allow their children to walk or bike to school. And the students had a much different viewpoint. In other words, most often they wanted to be able to walk or ride to school. Now, for middle schoolers, they would have preferred to walk or ride home because they could sleep a little longer if they got a ride to school in the morning, which was, you know, slanted their viewpoint. But for parents, parents were at the point where they were making all kinds of concessions with jobs, when they worked, where they worked, so that they would be available to drive their kids to school. And there was another study done in the University of Idaho that was dealing with the perceptions of danger and risk. And why were parents choosing that? And there's this element of convenience that and safety. So safety is one of those issues that is multifaceted. You can talk to any multitude of people and you'll get different ways to describe or define safety. But the heart of it was that weather was down the list and convenience was really at the top of the list. In other words, how it fits into the schedule of things. And then the safety was number two. And that's very broadly defined. So some people were concerned about the cars, where the students said they weren't so much worried about the cars as, you know, where what their friends or where they were walking together. So, you know, there's different ways of looking at it. But the bottom line was that quite often the infrastructure and built environment was probably the bigger aspect of why parents thought it wasn't safe. There is the element of, you know, stranger danger and those kinds of conceptions. But then that leads into the next part of that discussion, which is about what, how do we help and allow our young youth develop that sense of independence where, you know, we're saying, well, we don't want you to walk or ride a bike to anywhere. We want you to just stay in your car. How do they learn to be resilient when they, you know, come to a situation, whether it's traffic or something else that they learn? So how independent? I was recently in Switzerland, and you know, they have a 70% participation rate. And they, as a society, say, we want to influence that independence. We're saying parents, you're not allowed to drop your kids off at school. And that starts at kindergarten. And so as a society, they're embracing that sense of independence, that sense of active transportation, that sense of being independent. And so it's not 100%, but in the sense that what do we want as a society? And how much can we? And to me, the real questions should be being asked. If I don't feel my child can safely get to school, why aren't we making a ruckus to make it so? Shouldn't that be something foundational in our communities? And if we don't have that, doesn't that point out that there's something wrong with this picture that we should really be addressing in our transportation?
That's Matthew Kristen, founder of Urban Connections, here with us today to talk about the health and economic impacts of active transportation. Also joining our conversation is Dr. James Longhurst, UWL Associate Professor and Bicycle Advocate, and Lewis Kuhlman, Associate Planner for the City of La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And James, earlier you mentioned a survey that was taken on the UWL campus, and I know that you've been pretty involved in kind of advocating for more access to active transportation. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. This comes out of my research as a historian. I'm an historian of urban and environmental policy, and for a while I was writing about air pollution, and then I started writing about transportation and bicycle history. And as I was wrapping up a writing project, my first book on the subject, Bike Battles, A History of Sharing the American Road, I was coming back to campus. I was realizing that the mission of my particular subset of historians, public history and policy history, is to research history that helps us make good decisions in the present. And I figured I had to apply that. I had to do something, not just in the archives. So I spent a year working on campus and with a number of really amazingly talented and dedicated volunteers, students, and staff to put together a bike ped plan for campus and apply for the first time ever for bicycle-friendly university status for UWL. Didn't think we were going to get it our first time. It was quite a stretch, and we had to work quite a bit. But a number of projects came together on campus, including new bike repair stands, some new educational projects, new bait bike program with the UWL Police Department, and received bronze level recognition. I'll be talking about that process of applying for that at our active transportation conference this week.
And, you know, why do you think it's important for UWL as a college campus to be thinking about these things?
Well, we've listed a number of the broad ideas here, and UWL students are quite committed to sustainability. They're also very physically active. We have a long tradition of our commitment to education in athletics and health. But additionally, and it comes down to some real bottom line numbers, parking for automobiles is really amazingly expensive. It gets more expensive when you start running out of room and you have to start either building up or building down. And, you know, we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars per parking space in ramps. And, you know, you can fit 10 to 15 bicycles parked in the same space as one car. And as the campus looks forward, as we plan for the next 50 years, there's not enough room, there's not enough money in the state budget, certainly, to continue to build automobile parking. We're going to have to maintain the percentage of biking and walking and transit onto campus that we have, but preferably increase it for really bottom-line budget reasons. That I think is a important concern. We get a great deal of support from administrators because of that, simply because there's not enough room and there's not enough money.
Dr. James Longhurst, UWL Associate Professor, is here with us today to talk about human-powered transportation and how the Cooley region is hoping to make roadways more friendly to cyclists and pedestrians. Also joining us is Matthew Kristen, founder of Urban Connections, and Lewis Kuhlman, Associate Planner for the City of La Crosse. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the benefits and challenges of active transportation. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find a link to learn more about UWL's Midwest Active Transportation Conference and the Wisconsin Bike Summit. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today, were talking about human-powered transportation in the Cooley region. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, physical inactivity in the average American's lifestyle has been a major contributor to the increase in chronic health conditions like obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and more. Combined with growing concern over greenhouse gas emissions, more and more people are calling for improved opportunities for walking and biking. Joining us today to talk about how La Crosse and surrounding communities are responding, our Associate Planner of Community Development, Lewis Kuhlman from the City of La Crosse, Matthew Kristen, founder of Urban Connections, an education and advocacy organization in Onalaska, and bike advocate and author Dr. James Longhurst from the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse. And James, you know, I think it's easy to say that a lot of times cars are kind of a symbol of wealth in America. You know, how has that contributed to, you know, kind of our dependency on cars and less walking and biking?
Well, one thing that historians will say about our transportation choices is they're not purely rational. We don't sit down and do the math about things. Our emotions, our society, societal judgments are as much a part of our home budget and the miles that we have to travel. And the automobile, like the bicycle, started out as the plaything for the rich. The bicycle in its first boom in the 1890s was that. And then in the very early 20th century, the automobile had very high status connotations. And the different meanings of the bicycle or the bus or the car, they somewhat change with each generation. Some of the associations stick around. Some of them are transformed. For example, right now in the United States, public transportation, the bus, is most often associated with the lower classes. And it's associated with dirty cities. But on the other hand, if you go to some cities in America where the bus is used every day for workers and white-collar workers, it has different associations. So these mental associations with what does it mean that I get to work in this way, or what does it mean that I get to school or get around in this way, those cultural associations matter a great deal. And it somewhat curses the bicycle a bit right now, because a lot of the negative associations win out over the positive. So we have a lot of really contradictory associations. Some people associate bicycle with you don't work hard enough to earn to have a car, or on the other hand, they associate it with that is the transportation of snooty latte swipping elites, and these two associations are contradictory, right? And yet they're both negative and they stick around. The automobile has positive associations, and it also sometimes has negative associations.
If you take a look at when you are a youngster, whether it's preschool, kindergarten, however you started out your career, one of the things that's ingrained upon you right from the get-go is that when they do their little unit on transportation, you have the car, the truck, the fire truck, the plane, the train, and sometimes they might throw in a bicycle, but it's not really viewed as transportation. It just happens to have wheels. And so our conditioning from day one in school is that bicycle is not seen as transportation. It's seen as something that is recreational. Now, if you look at, as you move into this, one of the real challenges of active transportation is that you do experience something of an identity change. When people start saying things to you, if you ride to work, you'll get comments that are things along the lines of, "Oh, how did you ever make it? I could never go that far." Or, "Aren't you freezing?" Or, "Aren't you this?" Or, "Aren't you that?" And so we have a general culture of that, you know, it's kind of like powder milk biscuits. You need to be able to stand up and be able to have the courage to not be timid about it. So there's that element of, there's just a whole variety. And what I'm trying to point out is that there's a number of different facets of why we choose or not choose when we have, you know, pick up our keys to go out the door, and whether or not we walk or bike or do something different.
And Matthew, how do you change that perception? How do you, you know, change kind of those the automatic assumptions that people make about active transportation?
Well, there's a lot of different facets that we have to work at. You know, the biggest one that we have is our ingrained sense of, I want to walk out into my garage, step into my car, and get to the place where I'm going and get out of my car and walk into that building. You know, the convenience factor is one. And human behavior is always a challenge, and that's our biggest challenge in that, you know, for us to make other choices. I think that I have a program called You Can Too, and the whole idea is that when we look at transportation overall in the U.S., we have about 1.6 billion, I'm sorry, trillion transportation trips a year out of all those citizens. 40% minimum, and you can eliminate, if you took it just to cars, 69% of all car trips are 2 miles or less. You know, we think of biking to work or walking to work or getting to work as our, you know, number one focus on active transportation. My sense is that if we focused on any time we have those 1 or 2 mile trips, that we can start modifying. You know, it's significant what we can add to the shorten the need. Our worst gas mileage, the most pollution, is within the first 2 miles. The most expensive for gas is within those 2 miles. It's the hardest on our vehicles. So there's that element that if we were to focus on the shorter trips that we take, I don't know how to put it in perspective whether it's 400 or 600 billion trips that are 2 miles or less, but that is drastically significant, whether it's, you know, contributing to the way that we can get a little healthier, the way that we can be a little more productive in school or at work, or whether it's the impact that we're removing from our local infrastructure and the needs, whether it's traffic mitigation, congestion mitigation, or, but, you know, there's that element of changing our perception and starting with, let's try those short trips and see what we can do.
Lewis, how does La Crosse compare to other communities in the state of Wisconsin when it comes to active transportation?
The city of La Crosse was one of the first cities in the state to adopt a complete streets ordinance. And what that means is that we have a policy that says we need to take into account all street users when we design new streets. Also, we've gotten recognition for being a bicycle-friendly community. We're at the silver level right now. That's not the highest in the state, but it's up there.
And other people in the state are pretty envious of that. I got to tell you, Milwaukee very much would like to be.
Right. And I think at one point we had the most bicycle-friendly businesses in the state. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've got a bicycle-friendly university now, which is great news. And we've also been participating in the walk-friendly communities. We're at the bronze level there. So we've got a good group of people of people in the city and active citizens helping out to improve the bicycle and pedestrian friendliness of the community. Also, one thing I wanted to add in regards to the status symbol of cars, I think that was... It was definitely an issue with previous generations, like growing up. Like this is my freedom, and I feel like you know, still sort of in rural areas, having a car is definitely equatable to freedom. I grew up in on a farm, actually, so having a car was definitely freeing. But I think nowadays the status symbols have become more access related, like having a cell phone or having not necessarily having a car, but having the ability to get where you want to go. So, I mean, for some people, still a car means freedom, but for other people, it could mean a burden of a car payment. So having that, you know, just balancing those two. Pros and cons of automobile ownership, I think is something people are really taking into consideration.
Matthew, how do you think La Crosse kind of sizes up to other communities in the state?
Well, I think that one thing that hasn't been mentioned, The Safe Routes to School for La Crosse County was the first in the state. They were the first to develop a plan, and that plan has influenced a lot of changes in our schools and infrastructure, at least to the point where it has been able to. Certainly would be nice to see it do more. There's been, this area, we have the Outdoor Recreation Alliance that has been promoting, the human-powered trails area. While it's not necessarily a transportation, it certainly overlaps with the active transportation in the sense of getting people out and being active. You know, it's one of the things that makes La Crosse area, the Coulee region, such a tremendous place to live and work and play. So, all those different aspects. The amount of work that's been done through the city to add bike paths, bike lanes, and more places for people, that continues to help feed that healthiness of our area and region. So, when it comes down to how do we compare, I think that La Crosse has got a lot of potential that it's developed and it's going to continue to develop. And I think that there's a lot of people that really, truly care about this community.
Yeah, James.
I want to point again to sort of bottom lines that this is the sort of thing that can make La Crosse stand out when competing for employers and employees and people who want to. So we have the kind of economy we have, businesses can be almost anywhere. And where do they want to be? Well, someplace where people can buy homes, walk their kids to school, live in walkable, healthy communities. That is a competitive advantage. It's not just a luxury.
One of the things to me that's really at the heart of this issue is for our communities to understand the true economic impacts of our investment into active transportation. When we look at, oftentimes look at whether we want to put in a sidewalk here or we want to look at this road and do something, whether to just, mill and overlay it or what other, and we look at something like the direct cost, we need to learn and to make ourselves more educated about the whole ramification of what our investment is going to pay for and what we're going to get back out of it and take that approach because, the economics of active transportation have many and very significant ripple effects that we understand that when we put a bike lane in front of a business in a retail area, there have been studies around the country that have shown that for every dollar, there's been a $9 return. Washington, D.C., North Carolina has demonstrated that when you put in where people are walking and biking, there was a study done that through the League of American Bicyclists that established that people who bike stop more often at businesses. And when they stop more often, that means the total of their retail sales goes up, whereas a car oftentimes can spend more on one, but they would only come once, so the frequency is much less. So understanding that our retail, our businesses, our competitiveness, our real estate, and what it does to promote the kind of lifestyle that people want to live in, all have true economic impact. And that we need to be more educated. And it's part of why I started the Active Transportation Conference, is to help bring people together to build a more common base of knowledge and to accelerate that so that, we understand what some of those practices are and we understand a little more about how we can educate and what is it to learn about some of these that can have an impact.
That's Matthew Kristen, founder of Urban Connections, here with us today to talk about the health and economic impacts of active transportation. Also joining our conversation is Lewis Kuhlman, associate planner for the City of La Crosse, and Dr. James Longhurst, UWL associate professor and bicycle advocate. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Lewis, you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, the positives of active transportation, but, you know, I definitely think that there can be some costs associated with kind of promoting more bicycling and walking. I mean, just adding bike lanes and widening streets, sidewalks, even expanding public transit to make active transportation more accessible. I mean, how do you kind of balance those costs?
Yeah, that's an important consideration that we need to think about a lot. Right now, our bicycle and pedestrian funding is pretty low, but just general street maintenance can really help with biking and walking. So some of the costs that we deal with is that, you know, to get buses to run more frequently, that's a lot of money, and you know, sometimes it's hard to balance like where to go and how frequently that should be. With bikes and walking, fortunately with walking, sidewalks are pretty well tied in with street reconstruction. So I feel like that's pretty well taken care of. However, we've got a lot to work on as far as sidewalk infill and also repair. So, I mean, just maintaining that infrastructure is important. For the cost for biking, the more biking there is, the more potential there is for accidents. So when you see like, oh, bike accidents are going up, you may think it's more dangerous, or it could just be that more people are out biking. And hopefully, you know, that levels off and people are more aware of bicycles in the streets. So, that's definitely a challenge that we face. And also to comment on what La Crosse has to offer, one of the things we mentioned over the break was just that the city itself is very flat, which makes it really great for commuting. However, the surrounding area is really hilly, so there you've got that challenging terrain for recreation. So you've got a really great balance of both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking of surrounding area, I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier of, you know, how active transportation is maybe viewed differently in rural communities and rural settings. I mean, is that something that's really achievable for maybe someone who lives outside of La Crosse and has to commute into the city?
That's a good question. With the La Crosse Area Planning Commission, they also have a bicycle and pedestrian master plan, too, that fits in with the city's plan. So hopefully we were able to work together regionally. What I think, as far as, like, going from rural to urban, as La Crosse the universities draw a lot from those rural regions, and those new students have this idea of a car as a sense of freedom. So they bring that to the city. And so, getting used to being in a city as opposed to being in a more rural area is a challenge.
And, you know, just playing devil's advocate, you know, it's hard when it gets really cold in Wisconsin and it snows a lot here, yeah, and we get ice and you know, the summer times it can get kind of hot and humid, or even just bicycling and or walking in the rain. I mean, that's not very fun. How, you know, James, how do you make active transportation accessible for all seasons?
I think one of the, and I was thinking of this about the urban-rural question as well. I think one of the things I want to do as an advocate is to reassure people, I am not here to take your car keys away. That I think what I'd very much like to do is to make certain that there are different options available. Speaking broadly, we know as farmers that monocultures are bad. You have one point of failure and then you have disaster. So if everyone is using exactly the same transportation network and there's only that transportation network, you have disastrous failure possibilities. But if you have different options, I own and enjoy cars, and believe me, if it's negative 20 and I need to be at the emergency room at 2 a.m., I am getting in my car. And if I need to be on the other side of the state in 2 hours, I'm getting in my car. But what we'd like to do is design transportation networks that allow for multiple options and the appropriate tool when it's necessary. I like to say I own a chainsaw and a pair of nail clippers. And those are two different tools. And if you use the wrong tool at the wrong time, you could do a great deal of damage or get nothing done at all. Sometimes walking is the right tool. It does less damage to society, your surroundings, to your health, to your budget. Sometimes a car is the right tool. And sometimes there's no substitute for a bus or an ambulance. These are different tools, and we should design our transportation network for all of them.
We've been talking with Matthew Kristen, founder of Urban Connections, Dr. James Longhurst, UWL Associate Professor, and Lewis Kuhlman, Associate Planner for the City of La Crosse, about the benefits and challenges of human-powered transportation in light of this week's Midwest Active Transportation Conference and the Wisconsin Bike Summit happening here in La Crosse. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find the link to learn more about the conferences happening here in La Crosse. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.